on the fly at the Drone Cage, which is in the beautiful brand new Aviation Gateway Park for 2015. What a great air venture, and Manny from the Drone Media Group is with me this afternoon for our broadcast. How does this wind affect these guys, Manny? Because it's pretty breezy today.
Jeff, we find out how the wind affects these guys every time they go up, so it hasn't really affected them too much so far. The guys flying the smaller copters usually have a little bit more trouble with this wind. As we said earlier, safety is the utmost concern. So any pilot at any time, as we saw with the Embry-Riddle pilot, any pilot at any time can determine that the conditions are unsafe and decide not to fly.
Right. So what do we have going on here? Introduce our next subject.
Absolutely.
Our next victim here in the drone cage.
We're going to go from small drone to big drone, from quadcopter to octocopter. And what we have in the cage right now, being flown by Andrew Baker of Drone Media Group, this is the DJI S1000 octocopter. This is considered the smaller end of what is a heavy lifter copter. This octocopter can lift a payload of upwards of 10 pounds. And we're getting pretty gusty here. I think Andrew's just kind of wanting to see what the wind decides it wants to do before he takes off. If you're ready and you feel safe, you can take off.
So 10 pounds, so what would you typically carry? What would you want to carry?
This is a professional video or photography drone.
Oh, okay.
Currently it's carrying a DSLR camcorder. That's a Panasonic GH4. It's considered one of the higher end DSLR camcorders. And to be able to put a camera, a piece of technology like this in the air with the gimbal technology that keeps the video feed stable, this is a real advancement for people that produce video for a living.
So, and the camera probably also has some stabilization built in it as well. So it's probably, I'm seeing it, that's his feed, right? From the copter. And so it's very stable. It's a very stable feed.
It's very stable. This is mostly based on the gimbal technology. Generally, the stable stability fixes that a camera comes with it are designed for shaky hands and not really the fast, jerky motion that comes with drone operation. So we usually keep those stable indicators off on the camera, and we let the gimbal do its job.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So I like the setup. He's got a harness that he's using to hold the controller and the video monitor all together. That's pretty cool.
It's not only cool, it's really, really functional. I mean, when you're flying an airplane, the controls don't move around so much, right? You don't really have a chance to drop the dashboard. But here you might, if you're just holding the controller by hand and your hands get sweaty. That could be catastrophic, especially if you're flying in manual mode. So the harness helps stabilize everything, but just as importantly, make sure you never lose control.
I see how the camera is slung below, so the camera stays level even if the drone's changing direction.
Absolutely right. That is the magic of the gimbal technology. And, you know, we've had some of this technology on handhelds for quite a while, but the gimbal technology that's small and light enough to hang on a drone and keep these cameras stable, it's really an advancement that has proceeded far faster than we expected.
Now he's just practicing hovering right now, just trying to fight this wind a little bit.
That's right. He's giving a demonstration, and this size cage might be a little bit small for an octocopter this size, but Andrew's doing a great job staying stable, staying safe, and giving the crowd quite a demonstration. I wanted to point out, Jeff, one of the heaviest things about this copter is the batteries.
Uh-huh. And what you would think you're driving 8 motors.
That's
so it's sucking some juice, right?
That's right. Those neon green squares that we see out of the back of that copter, those are 2 10,000 milliamp lithium polymer batteries, and even with those big honking batteries, we'll be lucky to get 10 minutes of flight time on a windy day like this.
Oh, wow. Well, what other applications would you, or is this just for ENG, pretty much?
It's not just for ENG. Some of the guys are staying very busy doing mapping, aerial mapping, surveys, and incidentally, that uses a very similar setup to this. This would probably be overkill unless you're looking for some type of very, very detailed 3D image. But with a different imager, you can do all sorts of industrial applications with this type of rig.
It just seems, though, that 10 minutes is a little short to get anywhere and then film and then get recover the drone.
It might seem like that, but for people that are doing things like surveillance or inspection, it might take somebody a half hour to get to the top of a rooftop to see what's going on in it, even by elevator and maybe the rooftop stairwell.
Oh,
but these
okay.
guys can go up in 3 to 5 minutes and figure out everything that's happening up there, snap a few pictures, be back on the ground, and nobody even had to risk themselves on top of that roof. 10 minutes can be quite a long time.
Yeah. Well, when you put it that way, that makes sense. I was thinking more like a military application where it's going, it has to travel somewhere on its own. Those are much bigger drones than this. bigger batteries.
Jeff, thankfully for us and our compatriots, the military has a whole different level of technology available to them.
Well, and it seems to me that if somebody went to Emory-Riddle, like we were talking to Dave earlier, got a degree in this type of technology, that might be a great place to go with it. Something along those military lines. It might be something military is looking for.
That's absolutely right, and I think it's a great segue to our next guest on the show because many people are asking about the laws and regulations and what they need to know if they want to get into flying drones for commercial applications. As part of the AirVenture team of experts that were brought out here to educate and inform our membership, we have Lisa Ellman. She's an attorney from D.C. with Hogan Lovell's partnership, and she's one of the foremost authorities on the laws and regulations. She has a lot to say, so I think I'll just hand over the microphone
to
Lisa.
All right, great. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you for having me.
We all have questions about this. Obviously, it's a hot topic right now. Obviously, we're flying in a cage.
Yep.
It's probably because for safety, we're still at the level where we need to have some security.
Yep.
What's going on out there with the Amazons, the for example,
yep.
people who want to operate these UAVs and drones in all kinds of different applications,
right.
in FAA airspace.
Exactly. So we've seen all of the reasons, all of the many benefits of drones, and all of the different and amazing shots that you get with a drone that compared with other pole cameras, helicopters, and such. So companies can't wait to be able to use drones. Companies like Amazon, lots of different companies that can't wait to be able to use them for everything from real estate to wedding photography, infrastructure inspection, and everything else. Right now, the technology is a timeless problem in our country, but the technology has moved more quickly than the policymaking. And it is actually currently illegal to operate drones here in the domestic United States without a special license from the FAA. One of the ways that you're able to fly here in the United States, if you're a company looking to fly and take advantage of the many benefits, is through what's known as a 333 exemption. So we've heard lots of folks here at the EAA Air Show and in the Drones Pavilion talking about whether they're in line for an exemption or getting an exemption, and what they're referring to is this 333 exemption, where you're essentially telling the FAA, I understand that a drone is an aircraft and that I have to abide by the federal aviation regulations. A lot of those federal aviation regulations don't make any sense as applied to drones. And so this is how I'm going to be able to fly my drone in a way with an equivalent level of safety as if it were a manned aircraft.
Uh-huh. And what is that process right now?
Yep. So you you go to the FAA, you apply, you issue, or you submit a petition, which is tied to your legal entity. You explain to the FAA which vehicles, in terms of the makes and models that you're going to use. You describe to the FAA what you plan to use the UAS for. So, for example, area data collection to do roof inspection, just for example. And you tell them how you're going to do that and which of the federal aviation regulations you want an exemption from, and how you will achieve an equivalent level of safety and why it's in the public's interest to do so. So, for example, in the case of flare stack inspection, it obviously makes a lot of sense to send a drone up rather than a person, for example. Over a film set, it's in the public interest to use a drone over a film set, where if it crashes, it could be less catastrophic than a helicopter. And you explain to the FAA exactly how you do that, how you do it in the public interest. The FAA has recently streamlined the 333 exemption process, so we've now have over 800 approvals for companies across the country. And once you get that approval, you're able to fly anywhere in the United States, not geographically limited. You can fly as long as you're 5 miles from an airport, not in restricted airspace, and you follow a set of conditions, you'd be able to fly up to 200 feet with a blanket COA, and then getting an additional set of approvals to fly between 200 and 400 feet.
Okay, so that's the existing program now. I know that people are pushing for some changes to that.
Yes.
Policy, the FAA is studying it very hard right now. Are you involved at all in any of that process?
Yes. So I am now a private lawyer in the private sector where I help companies that are interested in flying UAS or in the UAS business. In a previous life, a few years ago, I actually worked for the federal government. And I was the head of drones policy at the Department of Justice and worked on many of these issues with the White House, with the FAA, within the federal government. The FAA recently released a proposed rule, which was released on February 15th and is undergoing the kind of going through the policymaking process now, but it will really open the skies to commercial drones and private use of drones. It will allow for, you won't have to have a private pilot's license, for example. You'll be able to operate a drone with a UAS operator certificate. You'll be able to fly up to 500 feet, 100 miles per hour, 55 pounds or less. It'll still be within line of sight. There's various conditions that will likely be approved. And once the rule is final, it will open the skies. But the key right now is that's not the final rule yet. So we're still operating under this 333 exemption system. But we will get there hopefully in the next year or two.
So it's going to be that long, actually.
Yes, the FAA has stated they would like to get the rule out by the end of the year. Realistically, it will likely be sometime next year, perhaps mid to end of next year. Just these rules, especially the more complex they are, have to go through a whole interagency process. And so even if the FAA really wants to get it out, it still has to go through all of the federal agencies. And so I would say about approximately a year and a half or 16 months or so from February when it was first issued, we'll see a final rule sometime next year, perhaps mid to end of next year.
Okay, Lisa, great. Thank you for that great information.
Yeah. Thank you. Great to be here.
Jaymont J, we're on the fly at Aviation Gateway Park in the drone cage. We're going to come back and see some more drones fly here in just a moment. You're listening to EAA Radio.